Well, thank you all for coming. This is the Orchard Hills Maplewood Association's second ward city council forum. Just a brief aside about our association. We are the association for the homes roughly bounded by Plymouth, Green, and Nixon. There's a southwest corner is not part of us. It's kind of south of Blewett and west of Georgetown. Most of the neighborhood is part of our association. We're over 400 homes, and if you live in our association, we hope that you'll join, and or review if you joined in the past. Wendy Carmen is here from the board. She's our treasurer, and she can take your dues if you want to do that. We also have Jack Cedarquist, our president, here off to the back here. Greg is our vice president. Ann Kara McCall is here from the board. Frank Kaminsky. Who else? Anyone else?
Jerry
Schulte, sorry, my neighbor. So, again, thank you for coming. The format's going to be opening for a minute each. Nancy Kaplan won the hat draw, so she's won. Then questions that we've written up that will be limited to a minute and a half per response, going back and forth, who answers first. I guess we'll say Kirk answers first because he's going to go second on the openings and then vice versa. I'll get that wrong at some point, and hopefully they'll correct me. At the end, we'll have 2 minutes for closings. We've got the room, I'm not sure till when, but probably till they close, but we're going to try to get on at 8 o'clock tonight. If you guys want to stick around, though, and if the candidates are around, you're welcome to approach them afterwards and see if they have time to talk some more. So thank you for coming. One more thing, a plug. Our next event is the annual Fall Festival right by the OHAC pool on Georgetown, September 28th. So mark your calendars, whether you're in our association or not, you're welcome to come. We have owls from the Science Center. We have games, donuts, cider. It's a nice event. So it's ready to start. So Ms. Kaplan, if you want to go ahead and give your opening statement.
Sure. Yeah. I want to thank you to the Orchard Hills Maplewood Association for this forum. And I'm Nancy Kaplan, and I have been a resident of Ann Arbor for more than 30 years. I've raised a family here. I have been elected and reelected as a trustee of the Ann Arbor District Library. My activist involvement in the community began with working with a grassroots group to save historic Huron Hills Golf Course from privatization. As we know, Huron Hills is a successful, affordable amenity for the entire community. This experience demonstrated that citizens know their community. They know what is best for their community, and they should be listened to. They tell me the foundation for a successful community is based on sufficient safety services, on infrastructure that can serve sustainable growth, and growth that respects our neighborhoods and the character of our city. And I agree. I ask for your support so that we can work together to move Ann Arbor in a better direction.
Okay, sure. Thanks, Pete. Hi, everyone. Thanks so much to the Orchard Hills Maplewood Association for hosting Tradeward Library, and of course to Ms. Kaplan for running, and to all of you for coming. I want to put in a plug for some of you to consider sitting up here next year. I've been living in the second ward for about 10 years, first in Geddes Lake and now in the Glacier Highlands neighborhood, just down Green Road. I'm married to Cynthia, who's on the musical theater faculty at U of M, and we have two boys, August and Harry. I also moved my parents to the second ward just a few years ago as well. I'm a professional urban planner with my own practice, and I take the 2C bus to my office on Main Street every day. Education-wise, I have a master's in urban planning from U of M and a bachelor's in economics from the Wharton School. I love public service. I'm chair of the Planning Commission, where I've served for 8 years, and I've been a member of the Environmental Commission for the past 5 years. My volunteer life hasn't stopped there. I've had deep involvement at the neighborhood level by chairing the Glacier Highlands Neighborhood Association for several years, and I've worked on some high-level projects like collaborating with the Michigan AARP to chair the first-ever conference on age-friendly communities in Ann Arbor. I'm running for council because I love Ann Arbor. I want it to stay great for us and also be a place that thrives in the future. And I look forward to a great discussion.
By the way, I want to mention this. There are cards being passed around to write down questions, so please fill one out and I'll ask them. I'm going to start off with a few questions from the board of them. The first question I think will be going to Kirk initially is about public safety. Do you think that Ann Arbor is currently adequately staffed for public safety needs, or do you think changes need to be made to the level of staffing we have right now?
That's a great question, you know, and I think most of us trust our staff and police and fire chief to with the staffing decisions that we've had to come to. I know the staffing's been reduced quite a bit over the past 10 years out of necessity, but there's been this interesting thing that's happened nationwide where crime keeps going down, and for most categories of crime right now, Ann Arbor is the safest we've ever been since we've started keeping track. So these are all great things. I'm really proud of our public safety officials who are doing an efficient job. Fire, you know, our fire protection, I think we're among the top 10% in fire safety ratings in the state. That whole sort of protection industry has shifted. There's many, many fewer fires that happen since building codes have increased safety standards. So to me, I look to our officials and staff to guide those decisions. But I've also heard there are always incidents of quality of life crimes. There was a recent incident, I think, in the Bromley area where there was a suspicious vehicle and people were wondering how to tackle that. So I think a lot of it is communication. I know we have a great neighborhood watch coordinator at the city, and I think people are really craving to know more about how they can be the eyes and ears for their neighborhood and keep us even safer.
Yes. Well, our public safety, let's start with the police department, has been very low. They were down, when I spoke to Chief Sito, he was down to 115. He hadn't filled as many as he could, which was 119, and now City Council has passed funding for three more police, so that will bring us up to 122, and I think that that's a good start. I would anticipate that we would need to add more as the community grows and grows out, out and up, and we have more people coming into the community to work. As far as the fire department, the Chief Sito said he is going to hire a fire chief, and I'm also hoping that we'll be able to meet the national standards of number of firemen in and number of firemen out, which is for their safety, two in, two out, and also that we will be able to do it in the correct amount, in the approved amount of time, which would be for safety. And just to mention that in the Northeast Area Plan, it was suggested in 2006 that this area get a new fire station for safety and for delivery of services in a timely manner.
Thank you. Just to let you know, my timer goes by 2 minutes long. It's up on my hand up at 90 seconds. There's no buzzer for
okay. That. Sorry.
So
I'll
have just, to... you're fine, though. Just to let you know, I don't have an alarm for that amount of time. But the next question has to do with a proposed development near Nixon, Duvarin, Green, that area. Essentially, what are your thoughts on that? Sort of describing the question as a high-density development. What do you expect the traffic impacts to be? And just what's your position on that if it was brought before you as a member of City Council?
Right. So I attended the Thursday meeting where Toll Brothers met with the community, and it was very obvious that you, the community, do not want that density, and that density is really does not fit in with this community at all. And not only the living density and the density on the property, but then the traffic will be horrific. So people have asked me, I stayed and I talked to people afterward, and I said that now is the time to act, to organize yourselves, and to go before Planning Commission and to go before Council and tell them this is not what you want. This is the time to get the zoning that you want, because the property hasn't been zoned. It is not part of Ann Arbor yet. No work has been done. No site plan has been approved. This is the time to act. So I am very against that development the way it is now. The land will be developed, but it can be developed in a way that is harmonious with the rest of the community.
Thank you.
Thanks. Since I'm on the Planning Commission, I can't really give my opinion about how I would vote on this item, but I can share some observations. The zoning recommendations for this area came about from a five-year process with the community. I'm sure some of you were in here for that, the Northeast Area Plan that was folded into the master plan. And the zoning that was recommended for it was R3 or R4, which is basically up to 10 dwelling units per acre. I think what they're coming in with on average is 4.5. That doesn't mean that there won't be impacts. And as Ms. Kaplan said, there's certainly people respect private development rights and people will develop their land. So what I agree with is that the neighborhood should organize and discuss this proposal. I think from my experience on Planning Commission, the greatest impact that neighborhoods have had on development that's coming forward is conversations with the developers before it even gets to a meeting, before they've spent tens of thousands of dollars on drawings and engineering. They mailed everybody cards with their number on it. I suggest you go look to your community leaders and in the neighborhood and get in touch with them and have a conversation. They, I'm sure, want to have a productive dialogue. So I think it's, now is the time before it even gets officially proposed, because it's now in just a conceptual phase. Am I through?
Yeah.
Okay. We can do more later.
If I may say, when we're looking out here, if I can speak for Kirk, we don't really see you unless you kind of wave.
I'll step back.
Okay, sorry about that.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. What do you think about the city's current approach to balancing the needs of neighborhoods versus downtown? Is it properly balanced? Should it be rebalanced in a different way? Kirk, your first time this way.
That's an interesting question. It keeps getting brought up. I'm very sensitive to the fact that people are describing our city as kind of being two different places within itself. I think there are no lines that delineate the neighborhoods and downtown. We all use our downtown. Downtown people use the neighborhoods. We all use our parks. We cross boundaries. I think what a lot of this discussion has come out of is that folks have started targeting certain organizations within the city. First came a big attack on the DDA for 30 seconds?
No, you're fine. You've got about 30 seconds.
Yeah. Okay. I think the needs are being balanced. I think they always need to be looked at. There are, the DDA, for example, takes care of the downtown and promotes reinvestment there, and they brought downtown back from a really sorry state years ago. It doesn't mean that they shouldn't always be accountable to the city, because city council always votes on their budget. So I think we're working collaboratively now, and I think that should continue.
So this balance between neighborhood and downtown. So you probably all know there's D1, there's D2, and there's supposed to be a buffer between the high rise and the density and the D2. That's what the D2 brings in, this buffer, so that you don't have another 413 East Huron, where there is no buffer between this high rise building, which will be about 150 feet, and the neighborhood, the historic neighborhood behind. So I think that the balance is off now. I think that people, that 413 was a lesson, and that people are very aware and want to have the buffer and want to preserve the downtown neighborhoods, which are historic and which add a different tone to the downtown, having residents that have been here for a long time and engaged with the community down there. So I think that there's a rebalancing that is coming, and some have spots, three spots have already been downsized. And I think that, I predict, that more downsizing is coming, and we'll lose some of that tendency to our big, stacked, heavy buildings that are not the part of our community that we're used to.
Recognizing that the schools are separately governed and not part of your jurisdiction, what do you think about the city's connection to the schools, its relationship to the schools? Can it help the schools in some way, even though it's not part of that same governance structure?
Right. Well, the city used to supply the schools with police as they needed it. And I think that the city and the schools should work together, because the schools are short on funding. And there's kind of, you know, I'm on the library board, and so there's the same outreach that the library is doing to work with the schools, because the schools are short on funding. So if the school system should ask the city for something, I think that we should consider it seriously.
I think one area of successful collaboration has been in transportation, where our buses have helped out in transporting students, and that's a great partnership. Of course, the AAATA isn't technically the city, but it's something that the city has helped collaborate on. In terms of tax base, every resident that comes here pays part of our school millage. The downtown itself, not a lot of kids live in the downtown, but all the downtown residents indirectly pay school taxes, which goes to our school systems. And I think, when folks move in and families move here, some of the schools are desperate for kids, and they're suffering without them. So I think when we see new families coming into the neighborhood, it's a net positive for our schools.
There are two questions I think are kind of connected, so I'm going to combine them into one. One asks about changes to the master plan for the Nixon Road corridor. Would you support something of that nature? The other asks for your vision for the Plymouth Road corridor. So either of those two corridors, if you have a view on that, I want to say on both corridors, but they're both about our neighborhood, about the areas that surround our neighborhood, and what your thoughts are in terms of master plans or development you would like to see happen in that part of the city.
Sure. Again, I think the community has been really thoughtful about the Northeast area. There were a former council member from the Second Ward, and as well as a current council member, served on a committee that worked really, really hard on the Northeast area plan. And a lot of the recommendations that were that came out of that we're seeing being implemented now. One example is the Plymouth Road Mall, where the community has said over and over again how these corridors just need some new life. There was a parking lot that had been underutilized for a long time. Perhaps now it might be a little overutilized, I hear. So, there's a balance to be struck. But empty parking lots are unsightly, and it's not a great use of land. And people are enjoying the new tenants there. So I think that's a great thing. It makes it more walkable. I don't think anyone imagined people would sit in a cafe right on Plymouth Road, but there they are. So there's some interesting opportunities there, and I think that kind of organic growth along our corridors will make a big difference over time.
Okay. So the first part was changes to the master plan. The master plan from 2006, which is the one that is functioning now, was a change from the one that was done in 1989, and I think that there need to be more changes, especially regarding density, because as Kirk said, it can go up to 10 units per acre, and the Toll Brothers are going, I think, at about 6 or 7 per acre. I think that definitely needs to be changed, because it does not harmonize with the community. And Plymouth Road, You know, I haven't heard people talk about what they think of the aesthetics of building right up to the sidewalk, how much they like that. So I think that would be an interesting discussion. The plan also talks about having residences above the stores so that there's a greater efficiency in use of land in that corridor on Plymouth Road. That might be something that might give less expensive apartments, and it might work. They're further down on Plymouth Road that already exists. So I think the plan needs to be looked at, and parts need to be changed, and other parts need to be enhanced. And I think that it's time for a full review of the plan.
This question was directed to Nancy Kaplan, but I'm going to ask it to both of you. And the questioner asked about the proposed new train station. And their question is, what about on the parking lot that was previously classified as parkland? I'm not sure if that's a... You know more about that than I do, but certainly the question I'll broaden it to be, what are your thoughts on a new train station? Where might it be located? If you're familiar with this questioner's, the location he's mentioning, that's fine, but I guess I broaden this question to be either on a parking lot that was previously parkland or some other location. What are your thoughts on a new train station for Ann Arbor, where it might be located?
So right now, there's study being done, and there will be an environmental assessment, and the group doing the study has narrowed the choice of location for a new train station to where it is now in Depot, to Fuller, or perhaps on North Main. The issue that I see for Fuller is that Fuller is parkland, and that my concern is that it will set a terrible precedent for us to see that our parkland can be taken for a purpose that is not primarily park. I think that is, and the idea is that it will probably morph to be maybe 10 acres by the time that they're done with all they need for a train station. So the argument is that is the location for the hospital, but we don't have on the other end stations that will bring people into our station. So trains are great. This has nothing to do with trains. Trains, that's up to Amtrak. This is just about the station, and it's also not certain who will own it, who will manage it. So there are lots of questions about this train station, and there will be a vote. And I'm hoping that when the vote comes, the question will be very clear, so we know whether we're voting on a design, on a location, what it is that we're all going to vote on.
Yeah, we're going, as Nancy pointed out, we're going through a federally mandated process to evaluate where the feds would approve funding a new train station. I think rail is extraordinarily important. I think this is one of the most game-changing events that Ann Arbor will see in the next 40 years. Our rail station now is inadequate. It's not accessible to many groups. It does not connect. It can't connect with our local bus system because you can't turn a bus around. So it needs to be bigger, and the feds are willing to fund this. There'll be some matching funds, and again, yes, this the issue will go before the voters. So I think it's incredibly exciting in changing a train station because it has to be along the tracks, and the tracks are along the river, and it's all public land pretty much, with some exceptions along the river. It will have adverse impacts to land around it, and I think the process we're going through is to minimize those, but I will be unequivocal in my support that we have to follow a good process and absolutely leverage all the tens of millions of dollars the feds are willing to fund for this station.
Next question, I would characterize two parts, both having to do with, you might call them social justice issues that affect the city. The person asks, A, what are your thoughts about a living wage for city workers? Not clear if they mean just for the city workers or a citywide living wage ordinance. And secondly, what happened to the city's affirmative action plan, and do you think the city is doing an adequate job of having fairness in its hiring practices? So two questions, but both have somewhat similar, I think, bases.
Is that for me?
Did you just finish up?
Oh, okay, sure.
Yeah, I think if I'm wrong, I apologize.
This is an item that gets discussed, and it's of great interest to the unions that operate in this area, and I think living wage is incredibly important. I think you get what you pay for. We not only are committed to social justice in this town, and I want to further that. That's a value of mine, and we need to support our middle class and lower. And it's something that I would absolutely be in favor of. I know there's been some construction projects recently where people have looked at, well, you've allowed the contractor to subcontract out to some other organization who isn't following some of our own guidelines, and I think that's something that has to stop. I'm not familiar with the affirmative action part of the question, but I'm happy to talk about that, and if you can point me to resources, I'd be glad to give you my opinion.
So the city has a living wage. If you deal with the city for more than $10,000, you have to follow that living wage. And that living wage is, I don't know exactly, it's 12 plus if there's no insurance, 13 plus per hour if, just the reverse, 13 plus if there's no insurance, and 12 plus if there is insurance, health insurance. So whether the rest of the community would go along with that, that would be wonderful. I think President Obama's having trouble getting his 10-10 per hour, but certainly to raise the living wage would be a benefit to the whole community, because people would have more money and they could afford more and they would live better. And then I think there was maybe you're referring to checking the box if you're a felon, and I think the city has passed that no longer have to check the box, so that you have that someone who has been in jail or prison has a better opportunity to make a new start.
Interesting question. The questioner asks, should Ann Arbor be a big, small town or a small, big town? And that's all they ask. So interpret it as you will.
A big, small town or a small big town.
Town.
It's like being a big fish in a small pond or big fish in a big pond. We are, population-wise, we're not a very big town. I mean, we have probably 80,000, I don't know, residents that, you know, outside of the university. So we're not very big. And I think that's one of our charms, is that we have the university. We have all those benefits and cultural benefits from the university that gives us this feel of a big town. And yet we have the intimacy of our communities and walkable neighborhoods that make us feel small and welcoming. So I think that we have the potential to keep having the both the best worlds.
I completely agree. I see, obviously, there's times of change. You know, I'm not in real estate, but I observe real estate, and we get these boom and bust cycles. I mean, if you look at the past 5 years, you might think that we're on our way to becoming a large city or a medium-sized city, and I don't think that will ever be the case. You know, we're not the kind of city where people will tear down an 8-story building to build a 30-story building. I mean, the pattern is essentially set for the vast majority of the city. Of course, this is one. The Nixon properties are one example. There's some large acreage where there's going to be some development. You're going to see organic development probably along the corridors, which I think are all healthy. Cities that don't evolve in that fashion don't succeed. You have to cut services, and you can't keep pace with your revenues. So, I mean, the more organic, the better. I feel like. Again, you can't, because it's private property, you can't control the fluctuations. But I love the amenities that we have. I love the neighborhoods. Most of them are going to be exactly the same in 20 years. And I love the downtown.
The next question, it asks about response times for medical emergencies and asked if the fire department should respond. I think they already do, but I'm not sure about that. But in any case, what are your thoughts about the adequacy of the current response times, response capability of Ann Arbor's first responders to meet medical needs?
Sure. This is one of the primary roles of government is to keep us safe, and there has to be we have to set goals and expectations for what our response time should be, and that is a non-negotiable. I think the city is taking some great steps in terms of collaborating with townships around us. We have this relatively new system of the mutual aid box alarms, where when there is some trouble, whether it's just outside the city or just inside the city, the township vehicles will also come and help. So I think that seems to be working very well. I think it's a step in the right direction, because I think communities are increasingly realizing that for issues like medical emergencies and transportation and other things, people don't pay attention to boundary lines. We need to collaborate. So I think we're headed in the right direction. But I would, of course, if people think that response times are inadequate, we should absolutely take a look at that.
So for medical emergencies, it's slightly different than for fire. For fire, you need two in, two out. In the medical emergencies, they're there. They've been doing, a great job. In fact, the fire department is faster than the ambulances. They get there sooner. So, they have the jaws of life. They are doing a very good job. And we do collaborate for our 911, which is with Ypsilanti. So I think the department is doing quite well.
That's an interesting question. The writer asks, would you object to a 50-story high-rise in downtown Ann Arbor? Please explain why or why not. I'm not sure if that would be allowed, but that's the questioner's hypothetical development, and would you support that kind of building?
So 50 stories. Yeah, I checked. 180 is D1. That is the maximum now that is allowable in the core. So I think it would be so out of character that it would be really jarring, and that people would not want to walk by it or to be near it. And I don't think that if you talk about our fire department, we have a fire department that can go much beyond, I think, 10 stories. Maybe it's even 6. So, no, there would be no reason for us to have such a huge building that is uncharacteristic of anything in our community.
I would agree. The community has said loud and clear that they want clear expectations of building size downtown. I have heard people say that they don't want Tower Plaza to forever define our cityscape, our skyline, but going taller is not necessarily the answer. It on a smaller scale, it does beg the question of building shape, and that we're seeing that sometimes it's not just about the height of a building that people object to, it's the shape. One of the more controversial projects we've seen, the neighbors were actually asking for it to go taller so it could be pulled away so there's less shade. So it's 50 stories is a bit much, but I think, there should be some more examination of looking at shape rather than just a brute height.
This questioner asks about your thoughts about the crosswalks on Plymouth, and I think also on Eden. Some folks have said that there's too many. Other people think they're good where they are. You might want to also address the pedestrian safety ordinance, but just in general, what are your thoughts, particularly in our neighborhood, there are a number of crosswalks on Plymouth. What are your thoughts on the way they've been located, set up, structured?
Did I finish?
Okay.
I don't want to guess at what this, we have a great pedestrian safety committee working on this, and it's well-staffed and well-attended and seems like a great group working together on this, so I don't want to guess at what they're going to arrive at. I can make my own observations and what I've heard from many of you about the crosswalks. I think it's an example of some safety issues that needed to be implemented, but I think it was implemented too quickly. We are probably the most staunch car culture in the country, given our proximity to Detroit. And I think these issues involve a lot of danger, and they have to be done methodically. I think we implemented several things a little too quickly during this whole process. I don't think the answer is repealing it. I think it means fixing it. I think pedestrians are safer with lights than without, and I don't think it's realistic to ask people to walk really far out of their way to cross at a regular kind of street light, because studies over and over have proven that they don't do that. So we have to, again, look at communities where this has been successful and look where we potentially went wrong. I know some of those stop bars for the crosswalks are very close to the crosswalk instead of far back, so you get in this trouble of hiding people, but I'm really looking forward to the committee's recommendations.
So, yes, there is this committee working on the crosswalks, and they're supposed to have a report within about 18 months. But in the meantime, I think we have a lack of consistency. We have our ordinance saying one thing, and we have signs that say our local law, you know, step into the street. I think that's a major problem. I also think that we have many varieties of warnings. We have flashing orange, we have flashing red. I think consistency throughout a community is very important. Red means stop, and I would like to see that consistency be there for safety. We have walkers, we have bikers, and we need to have something that's understood not just by people who are familiar with this discussion, but by people who come into our community. So I'm hoping that, as Kirk said, the committee is a very good one, and I'm looking forward to interim reports and things that can be implemented before their 18 months are up.
Next question, I think Nancy starts this time. The question is, what can we do to improve the protection of Ann Arbor's streams and watersheds?
Well, I think certainly development is one of the things that we can do. We can watch how close they get and what happens to our wetlands or you know, that is definitely one thing. And I think that also we have been looking a little bit more at our streams, and we could use a full study to know where the rain beds are, and when there is runoff, where is it going, and how quickly is it going? So we have rain gardens. We're starting with that, and I think that's anything that will slow down the stormwater and let it percolate through will help. And so I think we can have more rain beds and we can have less fertilizer and talk to the community about it, and that might help.
Thank you.
The health of our water quality, we drink our river water. This is something that should be personal to all of us. And I'm very committed to looking at this issue. We have a long-term issue that's being fought with the Gelman folks over the history of that pollution out west of the city. That is something that we all have to lobby the state for, more stringent standards. But day-to-day, it's it's so great that, you know, our city procedures look very closely. I think we have very aggressive water quality measures in the city. All new development basically improves the water quality of our streams and rivers. They're especially redeveloping sites. Most of the sites that you see in the commercial corridors built in the, you know, 60s or 70s, all of that runoff with all the pollution from the cars goes straight into the stormwater system. Whenever there's a change to a site, they have to bring that up to code, and all of that is held on site and cleaned before it leaves the site. So this is, for the most part, when there's impervious surface constructed now, it actually improves our water quality. I think there's a lot of opportunities we can take advantage of now. I mean, I've got rain barrels. Many people want to get them. I think that's a nice first step into doing more heavy-duty things like voluntary rain gardens and other ways we can contribute to our water quality.
We have a couple questions that, I guess, address the budget. One simply asks, where would you like to make budget cuts? Another asks about ways in which the city can either raise revenue or cut other expenses to deal with upcoming infrastructure needs. Essentially, and the question is to summarize, what is your vision of the areas where the city may want to reallocate in the future? And particularly, are you going to announce any cuts you might be willing to make going forward?
I really appreciate that question, because whenever budget time comes along, city council gets up there and they argue about certain services being cut or restored, or how, you know, a police or firefighter here and there. And I think we are largely missing the bigger picture, which is, how can we grow revenue? We will be cutting services unless we grow revenue. And that's just a mathematical fact with the way that the budget's going. The discussion the community has to have as a whole. Where are we willing to cut? And if we're not willing to cut anymore, where are we going to get the money? I think there's some degree of efficiency we can achieve with some services, especially being shared across border, and that's happening. There's certain fiscal issues I think we need cleaned up. Like, we certainly don't want to waste money on infrastructure and that's not lasting. There's been some construction quality problems with our roads and so on, and these need to be taken care of. But the larger issue is, how are we going to get the money to maintain our parks? How are we going to get the money to repave our roads? These are very serious questions. It all has to do with tax base. I don't want to be left wringing my hands every year wondering what the numbers are going to be coming in and what are we going to have to cut. We have to have a discussion about revenue.
So, budget cuts. We've been there. Fortunately, our budget has been pretty good, that we've been able to add three police, that we have not had to cut back. So, and our funds grew 2.4%. So that's not a lot, but I think it's something that we can live within, and we're expecting further growth because the downtown is growing and these other areas are growing. So I'm hopeful that and I expect that we will not have to have further cuts, that we can live within. We've already been there. We've already done the 1% for art. We've already taken from our streets and our infrastructure, and we've already done the municipal building. You know, we've already spent our millions on big projects that I think, in retrospect, were overspending. So I think that that we're doing okay, and I am very optimistic about the future.
This questioner, I guess, has concerns about the character of downtown and feels there are too many chain stores and restaurants, and recognizing that planning commissions can't necessarily control what tenants rent what spots. Just in general, do you think there's something the city can do to maintain an interesting and vibrant downtown and to improve what we have?
I think I'm first, yes. So, yes, downtown has become Restaurant Row. It is a buffet, and what has happened is it's too expensive for the small you know, single entrepreneur to afford to rent. And that is a fact. I think that we see things swing. I hope that we are reaching kind of our maximum limit on more restaurants downtown, and we'll see a swing back to some retail to make it more interesting for us to downtown. But as is stated, that council cannot tell people what to do, how to rent their own private property. That is where they think they can do the best, and we can let them know how we feel, how we hope that we will have a bigger diversity of stores and things to do downtown.
This harkens back to what many people fondly or not so fondly remember as the Calthorpe process, where this was the first serious look in a long time that the community took as to where do you want the downtown to be in 20 years. And the way that downtowns have evolved ever since they were decimated by shopping malls and suburban sprawl is the way they come back is by entertainment and by residential density. Without those, without that first step, downtowns can't really recover. So what we learned from that process is that if we still want amenities like a full-service grocery store, we want more mom-and-pop shops, we want more retail, what the people who create those amenities say is, well, you need a certain number of rooftops within a quarter mile or half a mile. So the downtown residential density has gone up something like 50% in the past 10 years. We're seeing changes. We're seeing mini markets coming in. It's not quite what people want yet, but I think it's going in that direction. And local residents are disproportionately inclined to visit mom and pop shops rather than chains. So that's one way you can encourage those. The fact that we have historic districts is wonderful, and the way that those buildings are constricts the possibility of some chain restaurants going in. So we have a little bit of a natural buffer, but I think we can do more through certain zoning tools.
Thank you. Our current mayor, as everyone knows, is retiring, and this question has kind of two parts to it. How would you assess the legacy? Are you in favor of the policies of the current mayor, outgoing mayor, or against them? And if you're willing to say, if you're publicly endorsing a candidate for mayor, who is that and why? I don't want to ask you to leave a personal, private choice, but if you are actively supporting a candidate for mayor, then I'd also be curious to know what your rationale is. So, Kirk, I'll leave the answer.
Sure. You know, I guess I'm biased because, you know, the mayor appointed me to planning commission, so I think that was a good choice of his. But in all seriousness, if nothing else over the past 8 years, I've learned that it's really being on council is a thankless job to begin with. But additionally, when you're in a period of decline, you're nobody's a fan when you're cutting services, and that's what it has been since we came into the recession. So, you know, tempering that situation, I think the mayor is really just one vote on council for the most part. I think the mayor and many of the council members since I've lived here have done a good job being stewards of our money and managing the best they can with declining resources. Differences I would have had. It's interesting because I think a lot of people expect a lot out of a mayor to be a leader and being out front with certain issues, and that's not really how our government is set up. I mean, you need to have leadership qualities and you want to put ideas forward, but the way council works is a collaborative process. We're not a strong mayor city. And I think when you go out in front and propose something before the community has had a full discussion about it, I think you run into problems, and I think we've seen that in the past. And I'm not endorsing. I think we have several fine candidates for mayor. I'm not endorsing.
Okay. I was asking you for a personal, private choice, but if you have a public endorsement. Nancy, go ahead.
Yes. So I think the mayor many years ago, more than a decade, started out in one way, and I think he's changed to another, and become very pro-big, and yes, he is only one vote, but yes, he is the mayor, and yes, he does make the appointments to DDA, all the commissions, committees, they're done by the mayor, so with council approval. So I think that he has a very big impact, and I think that we have gone through our bigness phase and our spending of multiple millions of dollars, and hopefully on things that were not necessary, I think, in the size of our municipal building, for example, or the $50 million on the underground parking. So, and yet we haven't gotten an Allen Creek Greenway completed, and that's been going on for a very long time, and that would be an amenity that would enrich the community and would add beauty to the community. You know, people living near a path like that, their property values would go up. So you asked also about if I'm endorsing, and yes, I am. Steve Kunzelman, I think that he is controversial, for sure, but I think he has a lot of courage, and I think that he is willing to compromise. For example, he took on the DDA, and he was willing not to take all that he could take, but to compromise with them, and they accepted that compromise, and council accepted that compromise. He's the person who also got the library, the Y lot, sold, and now there's a promise for a building on it. So I think that he will take on... that he will take on the difficult issues, and that he's approachable, and you could talk to him and have an interesting discussion.
We have one more question. We'll go to closing statements. Probably time for one more on top of that. Sometimes we want to do one really quickly. Otherwise, one more, and then we're done. And this goes to Nancy first. What role do you see for city government playing in, I guess, revitalizing the North Main area, so up toward M14? What are your thoughts on the city's role in making that area more successful or vibrant?
Yeah, so, you know, first of all, there are already businesses on North Main, but the city is working on that. That was part of the project when they were looking at tearing down buildings that are in the floodway. So I think there are plans, but that road is not ours to do. That's MDOT's road. So what would happen, whether the road be widened or third lane added or the light, that's up to MDOT. But yes, that area does need to have some work done, and it would have to be done with the state too.
I think it's a great area of opportunity. There was a lot of hard work that some folks in here put toward looking at North Main and where it is now and where it could be and all the constraints that Nancy mentioned with ownership and so on. There are some great longstanding businesses that are located along there, and we certainly want to be mindful of them. But I think the excitement around the DTE property has sparked people's imagination for what the river could mean to us. And people have expressed that, goodness, I'd love to eat dinner and be able to look at the canoeists going by and some ideas for a swimming beach, across the way where there used to be one back in the early 1900s, I believe, and mid-1900s. These are great discussions to have, and we're limited in staff resources in terms of really analyzing what is possible and what's likely. There's some other land use issues that we have to wrap up, as been referred to earlier. So it's on the docket, but I think it's really exciting.
Well, now it's time for closing statements. Nancy picks number one out of the hat for opening, so Kirk, you can go first for closings.
Sure. Thanks, Peter. I'm sorry?
2 minutes.
Okay. I just want to be sure to reiterate that I'm really proud of our city. I think it's something most of us agree on, but it doesn't get said very often. I'm proud of our elected officials and our staff and community volunteers, many of whom are in here, who make Ann Arbor what it is today. Again, our leadership steered the city through the toughest economic times we've ever seen. Our public safety officials are keeping us safer than we've ever been. And the city keeps winning awards, and we're doing pretty well, given the fact we're in Michigan. We've got lots of problems to address in the short term, but we can't ever take our eye off the long term. You don't need to be an urban planner to compare cities who stop looking at the future and turn inward versus those who strive to both tackle both what's going in inside their boundaries and outside. I think we're really lucky. We've got many candidates who'll do a great job listening to constituents and advocating for them. Many of us have experience at the grassroots level with neighborhood organizations, which are the lifeblood of our community. But there are many differences, and this is something I get asked repeatedly at doors. One has to do with bus and transit. We're on record taking different sides of the recent expansion. I supported the recent AAATA expansion. I value its benefits to our students and our seniors and those who don't want or can't afford to take a car. The second is rail. I unequivocally support rail and supporting the outcome of the process that we're going through now. I think, again, it's a game-changing issue. Another is exposure to legal risk. We're both on record taking different sides of the 413 East Huron project. And I can just say that I will always protect our city's assets. If you do a Google search on Sandstone Associates versus the city of Novi, you can see some of the not-so-great ways that local government can affect your day-to-day life. But my main goal as a council member would be to set goals that we can all agree on and get back to moving the city forward together. To me, success means my kids looking back 20 years from now and saying, I'm glad the city leaders invested in our future. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
So, yes? We know Ann Arbor is growing and changing. We also know that the nature of that growth has caused much controversy. My approach to growth and change is significantly different from my opponents. I oppose growth that weakens the fabric of our city, such as the massive 413 East Huron building. The controversy about that development has caused the community to reconsider our approach to density. Attending the Toll Brothers Citizen presentation Thursday night and talking with residents after the session there, where a rejection of that project was abundantly evident. We need to act to prevent a development that will disrupt the aesthetics, functioning, and culture of this area. The natural environment of the woodlands and the wetlands serve both environmental and aesthetic importance and should be protected. The plan presents unacceptable density and increases in traffic congestion on Nixon Road, increases in impervious surface, demands on infrastructure, and decrease in quality of life. Since this land has to be annexed into the city and zoning is completely discretionary, we must advocate for zoning that is appropriate for this area. Priorities of better, safer roads, water infrastructure, adequate safety services have been neglected throughout the city and specifically here. In 2006, the Northeast plan stated that a new fire station was urgently needed here. Common sense and prudent fiscal planning call for priority attention by Council and Planning Commission to provide for the overdue infrastructure needs of this area. As demonstrated by my deep grassroots experiences, I am the candidate who will represent your concerns about retaining the character of your neighborhoods. I ask for your support and your vote to assure that Ward 2 has representation that reflects your concerns and values. Thank you.
Thank you all for coming. Please vote August 5th. This is also the end of
once again.
Well, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Very nice job.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you for making an hour, not an hour and a half.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I think hour is...